Speaking of organic chemistry, I know that some of you saw the pigs flying by earlier today because the website finally got updated. So, yeah, I know. So, there's one thing missing at the moment, though, because I didn't have the Friday notes with me when I scanned the other documents this morning. So, they must be lying at home. When I get home, I'll scan those and upload those. But all the other written notes are already uploaded. The draft version of the syllabus is also updated. However, I have not yet filled in the recommended problems for you to work, nor did I break it down by the individual topics, the sort of new page that got created one quarter. So I'll be filling that in over the weekend, but at least you do have that. What was written on that rough syllabus page that now is posted. And that's posted for all of the sections. The quiz on Monday. I think some of you are still nervous about that quiz. Maybe we should talk about some of the topics that might show up on that quiz. Or maybe I'll even tell you one of the few times I'll say what things not to worry about the quiz. Specifically, don't worry about alpha protons. Because all discussion of alpha protons is for what's coming next week when we begin aldol condensations and the such. So don't worry about memorizing pKa values at the moment. Now, that doesn't mean ignore anything that we said about acids and bases, because I'm going to review for us in a moment when are things reversible, when are things not reversible, and when and where does it matter. But so don't worry about, do not worry about alpha hydrogens for the quiz. So what are the main topics? Well, I've already hinted that at least on the quiz or the exam, you're going to have to discuss about the relative reactivity of carboxylic acid derivatives. You should know some representative examples of cationic versus anionic mechanisms. Now, I'm going to put this word reversibility afterwards. Oh, gosh. That's a little better. There we go. Okay. Because there's certain portions of anionic mechanisms that are reversible. There's certain portions that aren't. Of course, that depends, though, on which reagent we use. Then there's the fact that most of the cationic mechanisms are generally completely reversible. Why are cationic mechanisms normally fully reversible? Well, what's the answer to that? The answer is mostly intermediates are similar in energy to each other, and the products and reactants themselves are often very similar. For example, esters and carboxylic acids, they're so close in reactivity that we've still got this discussion out there about which one really is more reactive. So if there's not a heck of a lot of energy difference between the two, it's not difficult to go backwards and forwards between them, especially since in the mechanism it involves all these protonated oxygens, and one protonated oxygen versus another, there's not a heck of a lot of difference in energy in that either. So again, because of the similarity of energies of the intermediates and the similarity in energies of the reactants and products, the reactions are fully reversible. Yes. Well, there's lots of side reactions that could potentially occur, which we're going to run into that when we do come back to alpha reactions next week. But let me answer this question since I've asked it, and let me answer it on paper. Often, such as in esterification, The products and reactants are similar in energy. And more importantly, the intermediates are similar in energy. And the comment I made out loud was one protonated oxygen is not vastly different from another protonated oxygen. So, why are anionic mechanisms sometimes reversible? Emphasis on that word sometimes, which means you got to be able to discuss a case where it is reversible, but you got to know when a case there is when it's not reversible. So could somebody identify for me an anionic mechanism of a carboxylic acid derivative, or, well, no, not a carboxylic acid itself, because they would just get neutralization, which that's what we come up to in a little bit here. Could you give me some form of mechanism then that has reversibility to it? Oh, dear. Sodium hydroxide, which what would we call the reaction of a carboxylic acid derivative with sodium hydroxide? Saponification, or what else could we call it? Hydrolysis. It's basic hydrolysis. So some of you might have been confused when it talks about hydrolysis in the text, but essentially if you have hydroxide, that's another way of calling it, basic hydrolysis. So in that kind of reaction, if you had an ester with sodium hydroxide, you might recall that we looked at the sodium hydroxide and we identified that the conjugate pKa, which is of water, is 15.7. We allow this reaction to proceed. Based on the results of the oxygen 18 experiment, which I'm going to show you an oxygen 18 related mechanism today, because I thought it would be okay for me to say it works just like esterification, but seeing some questions that come up, I can tell it's not quite that simple. But the point of that experiment was that we go through these tetrahedral intermediates, so we're going to end up with this situation. Where we end up with a new alkoxide that if we ignored whatever potential effects there might be by having these neighboring oxygens, so ignore the neighboring oxygens, then based on the fact that this is otherwise a secondary alkoxide, we'd probably say its pKa is somewhere about 17. But that means that the base we start with and the base that we end with are about equal in strength. That's why this is reversible. So I'm going to go back, in fact, and make that step reversible. Well, when would we have a situation where this can't be reversed? Well, Wednesday we talked about Grignard reactions with esters. And technically, if we did consider the Grignard reagent as just an alkyl group, an isolated, a bare alkyl group, well, conjugate of that, an alkane, that has a pKa of about 60. So that is far more basic than whatever alkoxide we do end up with, no matter what the neighboring effects of the other attacks oxygens might be. So you could get really, really technical and say in any equilibrium, there's always reversibility, even if it's only one molecule of the stuff that reacts. But that be the situation we'd be in this case, because if we had a pKa of 17 versus 60, that's 43 orders of magnitude, which is a huge difference. Even if we took the square root of that, thinking back to some of your ice problems that you did back in Chem 1B, square root of 10 to the 43rd is roughly 10 to the 21st, which is roughly the size of a mole. So even if you had one mole of material, that means you'd only have a handful of molecules, literally, that would try even to go in reverse, and maybe not even then successfully. So since it's such a vast difference, that's why I've written this with a forward arrow, and that's why I will say, ignoring all these fussy arguments about equilibrium, this thing is not reversible. Now, if a portion of an anionic mechanism ends up reversible, but not all of it, when does the switchover occur? Well, it occurs when there's a subsequent reaction, not involving the carbonyl. And we saw that in saponification of an ester. And it also happens in saponification of amides. So I can't remember if we even saw the saponification of amide in this section or not, but I'm going to do it again anyways. Because whatever section I did do it in, it confused people. And so I want to do it again. So let's take this typical amide. And with the right number of atoms on it. And let's say we did saponification. So again, we'll take hydroxide. Attack this carbonyl. I'll leave the arrow out in the middle for the moment, because we'll discuss it, because this is where the point of confusion came from. Oh, no, this is reversible. We already discussed this part, sorry. It's the next part that gets tricky. Because again, if we're saying that the conjugate pKa of this alkoxide is roughly 17, then how likely is it that the following is going to happen? That when that alkoxide tries to collapse back down to reform a carbonyl, that it will kick off this nitrogen group. And here's the arrow I will leave out for the moment. Because what you'll form is a carboxylic acid, and you'll also get something on the way to a primary amine, but not yet neutral. It's going to be negatively charged. Now, yet again, I forgot to look it up, but I seem to recall that primary amines like this have a pKa of roughly 34. And if it's not quite correct, I'm not off more than a pKa unit or two. So we'll just call it that for now. So which is the stronger base? The alkoxide that's the intermediate, or this ion of an amine that just got kicked out? Which one's more basic? The amine, by far. So does this reaction want to happen? No. So in fact, if we were being really fussy about it, we'd write it like this. that, okay, it may be reversible technically, but it doesn't really want to happen. And that's what confused somebody. They said, okay, well, if it doesn't want to happen, why does it happen? Well, why does it happen? Because now you go back to the fussy equilibrium arguments, which say that if equilibrium can occur, it will occur, even if to some small extent. So if this happens, then the reaction can't reverse. Why? Because we just made this horribly basic compound at the same time that we made an acid. And so that neutralization captures, you could say, traps the carboxylic acid. There we go. So that is now irreversible, because the even huger difference between pKa values, 34 versus 5 approximately, for this acetic acid. And I think I wrote the same note when we covered saponification, but the same thing is still true here. That, running out of colors. Because both an acid and base are formed at the same time. Before the reaction can reverse, they neutralize each other. Preventing a reverse reaction. And that's where and when this particular anionic reaction becomes irreversible. Has this helped clear up a little bit the question about reversibility? Does this give you some clue as to what potential theory question might be asked on the quiz? Leonardo, you had a question. Conjugate pKa, because a base doesn't have a pKa. Well, it does technically, but it means what would be the acid strength of the next proton to come off. So if I want to talk about base strength, what I really should be doing is talking about pKb. But as soon as I start talking about pKb, everybody gets nervous, because that means you have to remember all your Chem 1A, and you have to think of everything backwards. But generally, people have this fleeting remembrance of what pKa is. So I discuss everything in terms of pKa. But if I'm comparing, again, I don't care what the pKa of that thing I wrote is. I care what is the pKa of the acid that made that, which that's the conjugate, and that's why I'm quoting the conjugate's pKa. For all of these I've quoted so far, every one of these I'm referring to the acid that would be there if you had one more hydrogen on there, because it's that hydrogen that came off that we're worried about in terms of the base strength of the anion that formed. Other questions before we move on? Yes?
So you said that an acid with a base was formed. Is it the alkoxide and the...
No, I'm talking about right here where the star is. It's the carboxylic acid and this anion. They both get formed when this carbonyl gets remade. So that's why this first step, the base here and the base here, they're similar. So this much is reversible. And that's what's mostly going to happen, because to go forward in favorable. But the whole point of this discussion is that if it does go forward, it gets trapped because of the neutralization that happens. Other questions? Then let me come back to the oxygen 18 question, because I kind of just said, oh, it's going to react, and with excess you replace everything with O18. Let's see a potential mechanism for that. So So, what we talked about in class was slightly different than the book's discussion of 018, because the question I asked was if you just start with a plain carboxylic acid and you exposed it to an excess of an acid source and oxygen 18 water, what would you get? So, acid mechanism, first thing it's going to have is protonation. And technically, reversible error. Carbonyl is protonated. It opens. And recognize this is identical to Fischer esterification. So don't just memorize this as a new reaction. Water attacks. That would be an alcohol if this was solvolysis, another word for Fischer esterification. And of course, if we have neutral water to start with, that means it's going to lose a proton once it's attached. So here's the deprotonation step. And now, multiple things happen next, which is why the mechanism ended up confusing people. Because we have three oxygens, and the comment I made at the beginning of lecture about cationic reactions. If we protonate any one of these three oxygens, we have virtually the same energetic intermediate. Technically, oxygen 18 forms a slightly different bond with hydrogens. It's called the isotope effect, which we may talk about a little bit later in the quarter. But such a small difference in this case, it doesn't matter. So if the oxygen 18 oxygen gets protonated, of course, that means we're going to go back to where we just came from. If either of the other two OH groups gets protonated, then we're going to go forward somehow. And let's see what that somehow could be. So one of them gets protonated, becomes a leaving group, and leaves. If this was Fischer esterification, the next thing we would try to do is to reform a carbonyl. And technically, it could be either one of these oxygens that becomes the carbonyl oxygen. So after the first addition, it's not you can't specify where the O18 is going to end up. It's got a 50-50 chance. But who says you have to even form a carboxylic acid? You know, there would be an attack and deprotonate step here normally. But if this is flooded with oxygen 18 water, couldn't it just go ahead and attack now? Again, you could go to the carboxylic acid at this point. Drop a lone pair into the positive charge, lose the hydrogen off the carbonyl, which then gets reprotonated and opens again if you did another protonate, open, attack, deprotonate. So why go to the carboxylic acid? This could react right here at this moment. And if it does, then it deprotonates. We're back again at that same situation of three oxygens. Again, any one of these three oxygens could get protonated. But the whole point of this is that the oxygen 18 water was in excess. So over time, statistically, eventually, the plain OH is going to get protonated and leave. It could come right back again. There's nothing to prevent it, but that's again the whole point of this being a reversible reaction. Now, if either one of these oxygens forms a carbonyl, it could get deprotonated. Again, because of Le Chatelier's principle, we'll end up here eventually. And so once this deprotonates, we end up with our fully oxygenated carboxylic acid. Questions? Okay, so we covered relative reactivity, we covered reversibility, we've covered the death, this saponification, and the related mechanism of esterification, which is identical to this. We had the reductions and alkylations on Wednesday, didn't we? And we saw those for acyl halides, esters, and amines. I talked about anhydrides, but said we won't do much with them. So you need to know what an anhydride is, but we did hardly anything with them, and that's the little bit that would be on the quiz. The one thing we have left to talk about is hydrolysis of amides and then nitriles. And so that's what I'm going to do now. We just saw in process of reviewing the hydrolysis, the base hydrolysis of an amide, saponification in other words. It is possible to do an acid hydrolysis as well, but here's something for you to consider. That part of the reason this amide is unreactive is because that lone pair is tied up, the lone pair on the nitrogen that is tied up with the carbonyl. So even if you were to protonate the carbonyl, it's just not as reactive. Now, because that lone pair of the nitrogen is tied up with the carbonyl, it is unlikely that that nitrogen gets protonated. And this is unusual. We'll talk more about it when we hit the amine chapter. Amines normally are weak bases. This is not, again, because of delocalization. The whole point of this story is that you don't just use a nice, relatively safe dilute solution of some acid to do this reaction. No, you use concentrated acid, water, heat, and time. So it's a very harsh condition reaction. But with harsh enough conditions, it will occur. And it occurs by our standard cationic mechanism. Protonate, open. This is hydrolysis, so the attack will be from water. And then we have a deprotonation. Before I continue, look at this carbocation. Realize that nitrogen, again here even, can be donating into the carbocation, making the carbocation less attractive to water, again, making this process more difficult. So we're at the halfway point. Now, another round of protonate, open attack, deprotonate. If you get here, the rest of the reaction is relatively favorable because it is likely for the nitrogen to get protonated. We end up with ammonium, which can leave. If it does so, then we're in the same situation we were in the previous reaction. A carbocation with two OH groups around it. One or the other, we show delocalizing. And then deprotonating. So this is acid hydrolysis of an amide. Now, we did reduction and alkylation. There's hydrolysis, there's solvolysis, which solvolysis is not that favorable for an amide because amides are unreactive. Solvolysis would be like transesterification. It's just in this case, one alcohol would come in and the amine would be kicked out. Since it's such an unfavorable reaction, I'm not going to show the mechanism. But I guess what I'm trying to get at then is that we're done with amides. So now let's finish up with nitriles. Let's first review very briefly synthesis of nitrile. Oh, Leonardi, question.
So, is it the amide that we made is like more, we make something that is more reactive, right?
Say that one. We make something more reactive, which is part of the reason why this reaction's tough. All right, nitriles. How can we synthesize them? Well, I think I pointed out one of the ways, very briefly the other day, which is just to use sodium cyanide. Cyanide might be an ion, but once it makes a carbon-carbon bond, it turns into a functional group, a nitrile. There is another way, technically, that you can make nitriles, although it's not exactly just a nitrile. If you use hydrogen cyanide with a carbonyl source, you could make what's called a cyanohydrin. Is it hydrogen? That cyanohydrin, though, does contain nitrile functionality, and we're going to see this reaction once we get to carbohydrates. So that's why I wanted to show it as one of these nitrile-forming reactions. There is also a way to dehydrate an amide to make a nitrile, but it's not shown in your text. In fact, there's only one first-year organic text I remember seeing it in before. So I won't show that one to you, but letting you know there is that other way technically. What are reactions of nitriles? Well, hydrolysis is one of the main ones we'll learn. Technically, they could be used in alkylation, but we're not going to use them or trying to reduce our number of reactions that we're panicked about. The one thing I would like to mention briefly is what would happen if you reduce them. So since we're not going to worry about complexation in this case, in some of the reductions we saw Wednesday, oxygen ended complexing with aluminum, and it caused a slight change in the way the mechanism occurs. That doesn't occur here, so I'm not going to write out the aluminum hydride in full like I did previously. I'll be lazy about it and just show hydride attacking this carbon-nitrogen triple bond. It generates an iminium, no, not imium. That's positive charge. What would that be called? Some kind of negative ion, which can actually be attacked by another hydride. Lithium aluminum hydride is reactive enough. Certainly not a favorable product, something with a double negative charge. But after protonation, then, we end up with an amine. Now, what about hydrolysis? Let's do base hydrolysis first. Base hydrolysis would be hydroxide attacking, which is this not a favorable process. So this requires even harsher conditions than saponifying an amide. This means, though, to anticipate, once we're done with this reaction, we're not going to be able to stop a follow-up reaction. You'll see why. Because this hydroxide pushes the carbon-nitrogen triple bond open. Because if there's hydroxide around, we can reasonably assume that there's water around. If there's not, we can imagine there's another molecule around to grab a hydrogen from, and you'll see why in a moment there would be a hydrogen that could be provided. Because what we've now made is the nitrogenous equivalent of an enol. And so the next portion of this mechanism is tautomerization. The OH group gets deprotonated. Because that proton is removed, then even if there's not water, this is the proton that could have been used in the previous step. I probably said something like this the other day, that since resonance is not really a reaction step, it's fine to combine resonance with another step. So having deprotonated here, I'm going to go ahead and show the resonance that occurs. Yes? From here to here, a single arrow, because water is going to be much more acidic than this imine. So, yes, we've now made a carbonyl. We've now made another negatively charged nitrogen, which again, we can presume there's some quantity of water around, which means we just made an amide. But since nitriles are less reactive than amides, if we were able to hydrolyze the nitrile, that means this keeps on reacting until we get to the carboxylate salts. You then do have to do a secondary acidification, and we get out a carboxylic acid. And this is why nitriles are related to carboxylic acids, because eventually you can turn nitriles into one. Questions about this mechanism? Yes? You would need to be prepared to discuss each step of the reaction as to which, whether it is reversible or not. So based on that, yes, you would need to write the correct arrow now between each of the steps.
When you're making a negative 2 charge, the upper mechanism, you're getting?
That's still forward.
Oh, it's not reversible?
Well, this amine's got a pKa of 34, and which means that with one proton, it's going to be an even higher number, and this is incredibly basic. So why would this amine want to go back and make this negative 2 charge? The hydride is a strong enough reagent, it drives the reaction forward.
Oh, so you don't need to show.
Nope. Other questions? Then the last thing we have is the acid hydrolysis of a nitrile. Which, it's kind of everything in reverse from the base hydrolysis. In the base hydrolysis, the nitrile bond gets attacked, and then there's protonation. Here, protonation occurs, then the nitrile gets attacked. Once the attack occurs, we have a deprotonation step. And we've again ended up at the nitrogenous equivalent of an enol, which I guess we would call an imenol. There'll be another round of the same thing happening, or more appropriate actually, there'll be a tautomerization. So we do the acid tautomerization mechanism, starting with protonation. Then delocalization. Which now we've made our carbonyl. Which for the moment is protonated. And we get the carboxylic acid. Now, even though amides are more reactive than nitriles, which means we wouldn't really want to go in this reverse reaction, it's because we have a cationic and acid-catalyzed mechanism that these arrows are technically reversible. I did also mention that there is a reagent that could be used to force an amide to dehydrate and go back to a nitrile. But again, we're not going to be learning that for this class. Are there any questions about this last hydrolysis?
That should be NH2.
Oh gosh, yes it should. And then after more water and H+, then we would have a carboxylic acid. So, we have just a couple of minutes left. Technically, we were supposed to do synthesis practice today. But all I'll do is I'll make a mention of the fill-in-the-blank style problems that, of course, last quarter you're familiar with, and new people you haven't had the joy of experiencing quite yet. Let me just try to whip up a couple of really quick fill-in-the-blank problems, just to give you a sampling of what you might also experience on the quiz. Because aside from theory, it should be more than obvious that I might ask something about mechanism. But even after mechanism, then we've got these fill-in-the-blank problems. So if I had this, for example, what would you put in the middle? Right? That's Fischer esterification. Or start with thionyl chloride and react with an alcohol. Because if you look at the way these problems are worded, the blank where the reactants would go does not imply how many reactants go there. Now, if you have an answer that requires you going from 1 through 8 in that box, you might be able to guess that you're a little bit on the wrong track. But it's perfectly acceptable to have a simple two-step reaction like this. All right, so there's one possibility. Here we go. Oh, sorry. One, two. There we go. What's 2 EQ mean? Which means that two molecules of it are used, which means you have to use them in whatever reagent you start with. So what would be the name of the starting material? Now, didn't we learn, though, that carboxylic acids really only react once? I mean, it does use up two Grignard reagents, but it gets a ketone, not an alcohol. So it means we have to have an ester or an acyl halide. This is either acetyl chloride or some kind of acetate, maybe ethyl acetate, but not a carboxylic acid. What about one last fill in the blank problem? Oh, questions? Ben? For the H plus, yeah. Yeah, tosic acid can always be used for H plus. Yeah. You only need to write one possible answer. But I'm showing you there are multiple answers possible. One last one, I guess. You know I like cyclic compounds. Right, so reduction of an amide is like erasing the carbonyl. I think that's enough for today, so have a nice sunny weekend. 420.